week-long hiatus. We're back. Senior Central Podcast. Took a nice week off at Christmas. Hope all you had lovely holidays. Brad, I think your Christmas is probably better than mine. I spent mine with COVID, but I was not sick at all. I was asymptomatic. It was fun. Just sat in my room and watched television. I was sad that I couldn't watch basketball the whole time. There was like no game.
There was no basketball.
Right. It was terrible. But it was also like, it was good in that like I didn't miss any games I was supposed to go to. But it was bad in the sense that there was no games for me to watch.
You were supposed to go to. You were supposed to go to Providence, Seton Hall, and Dayton URI.
Yeah, but Dayton URI got called off, so I would have been 50-50 on the trip anyway. And then when I got COVID, I decided I couldn't go because that would have been my eighth day of quarantine, although I only quarantined for five because the CDC changed the guidance and I tested negative. It was fun. I got COVID from a restaurant I was at with a friend in Chicago and didn't find out until I got back to Albany. No symptoms, back to full health. And now triple vaxxed plus COVID plus naturally infected, so I'm free for 90 days. I can go wherever I want, Brad. Like to Purdue, Wisconsin last night, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, you know, the past what from it was like maybe like December 16th through maybe last Thursday or Friday, it felt like at least 50-60% of the games are getting canceled. Now it feels like it's easing up a little bit. I think people are kind of smartening up to, you know, we can play, you know, we have enough guys. You know, we'll just be down one or two guys and power through. But that has made the national media very unhappy because our college basketball podcast, like every other one, I think needs to become the Asterix podcast where we tell you guys where to assign the asterisks, what game are asterisks, and every game's an asterisk. And it feels like that more people would rather have the game be canceled than to have it be played shorthanded. And I'm not even talking about, like, fans. Like, obviously, like, the Seton Hall fans didn't want to play shorthanded. But, like, the national media seems to, like they would, for example, this Texas-Kansas State game, from, like, what I was reading on Twitter, it felt like people wanted there to be no game as opposed to Texas playing a shorthanded Kansas State team.
But I don't think it's like a safety thing. It's like this is just not fair. But it's just very hard.
Yeah, it's like
it's a competitive balance thing. But at some point you have to play.
Right. If we keep canceling games because a fourth best player is out, we're gonna run out of games. And I like how leagues are trying to reschedule games and kind of make it a little more crowded down the stretch. But, I mean, Providence is going to have a 5 p.m. weekday home tip against Georgetown as a makeup game. I mean, just what a disaster that is. There's going to be like 12 people there. I'm going to have to take like a half day off of work.
Or you could skip the Providence-Georgetown game, Brad.
I could, but...
But anyway, no, it is messy. I think it's good. I think what you're seeing more is teams are doing slightly – they're changing up testing protocols some. I know there's one concern that I've heard some coaches, particularly in the SEC and the Big 12 and conferences below that in the South and Southwest talk about, is that some of the new CDC guidance makes it so that there's like contact tracing again for those who are not boosted. Seems to be less of a problem at like some of the more Northeast schools, Big Ten schools, et cetera, Pac-12. But that's something to kind of keep my eye on. It's going to be ebby and flowy, I think, for the next three-ish weeks. And hopefully, as you get February, you'll have a combination of a whole lot of players having had COVID and the COVID numbers turning around and we'll be in a better place. But so then, yeah, I mean, it's a little messy. You get some games. I think the biggest thing is like there needs to be a really like – significant player missing for there to be an asterisk, because guys miss games all the time pre-COVID, you know, hamstring injuries and, you know, sore backs and like these things all happened.
I'm now the asterisk expert.
Like Johnny Davis is an asterisk, you're willing
right
to say
there, that? There are two asterisks the whole year for all college basketball. That's it. And it is Providence over Wisconsin without Johnny Davis, And it is Marquette over Illinois without Kofi Coburn. There's no other asterisks. I've declared it right here. Like, we can't, okay. Right, everyone's like, oh my God, Seton Hall missing seven players today. Kansas State missing seven players. I mean, Kansas State and Seton Hall were both missing like one starter and like one reserve. I think Kansas State was missing two reserves. And then like the whole end of their bench. And people are like having a conniption. I mean, at some point it's like, okay, at best, Obiagu is the fourth best player on Seton Hall. I think there are a bunch of guys that you could say are the fourth best player on Seton Hall behind Roden, Aiken, and Kale. Both Samuel and Obiagu are right. One of them. But like we can't be getting an asterisk for fourth best players. Like AJ Reeves is the fourth best player in Providence. Like we can't give an asterisk for this. I mean, come on. On the Wisconsin game, which we're gonna get to in a minute, Andy Katz comes on sideline and is like, Craig Gard was telling me how difficult it's been these past few weeks without Jacoby Neath and Ben Carlson. I mean, that was the low point in the history of the college basketball asterisks. I mean, Andy Katz trying to pull on our heartstrings because Greg Gard's telling him that Neath and Carlson couldn't practice. I mean, it's getting absurd.
Jacoby Neath is awful, and Ben Carlson is worse.
But they couldn't practice. So.
Oh, well.
Do you agree with me that there's only two asterisks this year?
I don't have enough time. I think there might be some, like, Adama Sanogo ones. But
yeah, but they have Whaley and they have Cole, and you know they have other guys.
Your take is only players that like truly cripple their team without them. Like Wisconsin without Johnny Davis sucks. Wisconsin without Johnny Davis might not be an NIT team. You know, with him they're like a top 25 team.
Right, because see this is a brief history of the asterisks. Right, we got the early one with Illinois. In Providence on the same night, you know, that was the same Monday night to, you know, the first Monday of the season. And it was kind of like, oh, well, you know, that's interesting that those teams got the win without the best players. But on shucks, you know, we keep it rolling. Right. And there were plenty of other times where guys who are throwing out the asterisks now, that could have happened a million times earlier in the year. But why Providence has been getting the brunt of it and why it's pissing me off so much is this is what happened, right? You have a podcast and you kind of talk about, oh, something surprising, you know, a team that's better than expected. And you say, oh, Iowa State in their defense, or, you know, Baylor was supposed to be like a 3 seed and now they look like the best team in the country because, you know, their guards are really good again and there's so much size and length and blah, blah, blah. But like Colorado State and their offense is like 15th in KenPom. But for Providence, it was more like the people were mad that they were wrong and Providence kept on winning. So then they kind of retroactively gave asterisks to everything for things that, you know, like no one gave Iowa State an asterisk for beating Xavier without Zach Fremantle. No one gave UConn an asterisk for beating Auburn without Alan Flanagan. Or Michigan State for beating UConn without Isaiah Whaley. But now we're, you know, people are just piling on Providence for that when there was hundreds of other instances earlier in the season when you didn't give asterisks in the same situation.
Well, it's a good thing that Providence has lost to Marquette today by like 40 doesn't count because AJ Reeves didn't play. Asterisk City, baby.
Exactly. And that's the slippery slope with the asterisks is soon. You know, UConn fans are saying Providence win over us doesn't count. And they go and they beat the Bonnies without Kyle Lofton, Marquette without Morcell. I mentioned Flanagan, Flanagan and Mr. Auburn. The asterisk can be never ending when you start giving them to a Seton Hall missing their fourth and sixth best player, Providence missing their fourth best player. People were trying to do it to Michigan earlier with missing their 7, 8, and 9. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, like Michigan getting like worked by Rutgers doesn't count because they didn't have a bench.
It's crazy.
Anyway, Let's get into games. We did not podcast last week, so there's a fair number of stuff, things to get to. Let's start with the game I was at on Monday night. Wisconsin-Purdue. Wisconsin was a 12.5-point underdog in this game at Mackey Arena. Great atmosphere. It was my first men's game at Mackey. It was a great atmosphere. Would have been even better with the students, but even without them, I mean, it was a great, just a great college basketball game. I thought, you know, coming in, I drove down with my colleague Jeremy Wu, and we literally were like, yeah, like Johnny Davis has to get 30 if Wisconsin's going to have a chance. And, you know, I had seen Johnny Davis do that against Houston. I was at that game as well. I'd seen him have the big shots against St. Mary's, and I was like, you know, he can do this. He could keep Wisconsin this game. But I did not expect him to be as dominant as he was. He was just incredible to watch, the way he hunted shots, the way he really was, like, unflappable. He was never too high or too low in that ball game. He had that really deep mid-range bag where he could get into a shot from different ways. He slowed down Jaden Ivey defensively, which was, I think, a really under-discussed part of that game, which is how good he did a job defensively against Jaden Ivey. In every way, he was outstanding, and I think established himself as a National Player of the Year front runner. I mean, it was incredibly fun to watch what he was able to do, and I thought the Wisconsin role players also did a really nice job, each of them, of just playing their role. It was a very similar script to what they did in Vegas to win Maui. It was Hepburn with the, you know, big defensive stands and a couple of steals that led to, you know, pick six, you know, layups and a couple of big jump shots. I think he hit one or two. Davison with a clutch jumper or two when Davis would go off the floor. Crowell and Wall and Vogt. I thought Vogt actually gave him some very good minutes. I know he did foul out pretty early, but I thought he did a better job than Crowell did on Zach Edey. Again, this is a not very talented Wisconsin team outside of Johnny Davis, but it just seems like the pieces fit well enough together where when Johnny does Johnny things, this team can be, you know, a second weekend in March type of clubs.
I mean, not only is Davis like a great first option, I mean, he's playing his way to be like a top 7-8 pick in the draft, maybe National Player of the Year. You know, he's so clearly the best player on the team, and, you know, he hit a ton of tough jumpers, like fadeaways out of the post, all this stuff. But the one play that stuck out to me, he threw this incredible pass in the first half to Stephen Crowell. Just like passed him open, just let him right into space. And, you know, Davison's a nice second option. You mentioned the role players played pretty well. I know from the times that I've watched Wisconsin, their perimeter defense has really stood out. Both Chucky Hepburn and Brad Davison can really defend. And when you play a bigger look in there with Wall and Crowell, both, and Wall's very mobile for his size, extremely mobile for his size, can play the three and the four. Doesn't shoot it great, but is really sharp around the rim. And then Crowell's a big 7-footer, not so much of a presence, but he has good touch around the rim. The pieces fit really nicely together, and now it's going to be interesting to see whether they need Johnny Davis to explode every night, or can they get away with a more subdued opponent or a more subdued performance against the middle, and, you know, maybe some of the top teams in the Big Ten playing them in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it was. I don't know that I would say Davis is a good second option, but like, he's just a pest, and he's clutch enough making shots. I thought Davis is passing. You mentioned that dump off to Crowell. He made 5 or 6, I thought, really high level passes. He made that one hand lefty whip pass on the baseline to Carter Gilmore, and Carter Gilmore like airballed the three. You know, there were a few times where he passed the ball to wide open shooters and they didn't make the shot. I mean, he literally could have had like 37, 14 and like 6 assists. I mean, those were there for the take, 6 or 7 assists. It was the most impressive performance I've seen in college basketball this season. I thought Davis's game against Houston was the most impressive game before that. He was that good in that game. And so to come out and do this, on the road at Mackey. I mean, how could you not love the kid? And he's earning all the NBA buzz he's getting. I mean, I think there's a very good chance he's a top five pick in the NBA draft.
Yeah, because, I mean, he can shoot it. He has great size, and he's a very good athlete. And now he's added more creation and more passing to his game.
I don't think he can project being quite a Bradley Beal or quite a Devin Booker, but I think he can be right at the top of that next tier of shooting guard in the NBA.
Like a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope?
He's got to be better than that to be a top five pick. I mean, I think he could be close to like a Bradley Beal. I don't think he's as good a shooter as either Beal or Booker. But I think
you think he's like a CJ McCollum level guy?
Yes. Yeah, that's probably good. I think he'd be a much better defender than that. But I mean, I think the big difference with him, I think there's 2 points on Davis. I think first, he doesn't get many set open looks. Like the Wisconsin offense does not produce a lot of like catch and shoot threes for Davis. So we don't see that part of his game. He's not a shooter. He is a scorer right now. And the Wisconsin offense, because it doesn't have the help around him, does not also provide him a lot of there's not a lot of like Purdue loaded up to stop John Davis. It didn't matter. You know, I think those two factors make me really believe he can be a 20 plus per game score in the NBA. Like I think he's that good. I'm a huge, huge Downey guy. I think Jabari Smith and Paolo are locked into being one and two. It feels like, and then Chet probably is third. But I think there's a real chance Davis winds up at four, and I don't even think it would be impossible that he could wind up sneaking past Chet.
Right, because the draft after that top three isn't super strong, right? Like Jaden Hardy's not playing that well. Durant is going to be pretty.
Jaden Ivey's supposed to be in that mix, and like I don't know how I draft Jaden Ivey in the top five right now.
He's kind of wild.
Yeah, I mean, I think the NBA spacing will be a huge benefit to him. I don't think Purdue's like the best like avenue for him to show off what he can do. He's so athletic, he's so explosive, but he just I think this is a good way of kind of segueing us into Purdue and some of the things I saw from them and you saw from them as well in this game. I just felt like Purdue made a lot of like Ivy in particular for Purdue made a lot of plays where he tried to make a great play when there was a good play available, right? Like there was one play that was particularly memorable where Ivy got downhill, I think at a ball screen, and tried to throw this like running like hook lob, like kind of like a Kareem shot, but it was a lob to I think Edie, and it got batted away out of bounds. And it was like you had him, like that was not you would have been able to like that was not the pass you needed. Like you would have been able to get the ball to him and get a layup, and you didn't make that pass. Instead, you get an out of bounds situation. I thought there were a few different situations where it just felt like Ivy did too much, whether it was, you know, throwing a bullet pass when he needs to have touch, right? Whether it was dribbling at a couple too many times, right? Like I just felt like he overplayed a few times, and the other Purdue guards aren't nearly assertive enough to, you know, for anyone but Ivy to do it when Ivy's in the game. You know, like Stefanovic was very quiet in this game. I think obviously Stefanovic is a huge key for Purdue anytime they suit up, and he was very quiet. Thompson was quiet. You know, it just felt like they were missing something. Obviously the bigs are incredible. Edie is unstoppable and, you know, gets you in foul trouble so quickly. Williams, that full court pass was great. I don't think I have like major qualms with Purdue. I don't think they're defending at a high enough level for where they need to be. And I think part of that's the personnel with Edie, but I think part of it, like they didn't look 100% locked in yesterday. Like they looked like a team that expected to win by 10 points. And I just don't think you can feel that way in the Big Ten. I thought in the second half, they came out of the gates with the intensity, and then they just couldn't beat Johnny, right? I mean, I thought Purdue in the second half played more than well enough to win, but Johnny Davis had 27 second half points, and that was enough. So what you have is a huge upset for Wisconsin on the road at Mackey. I still think Purdue is the best team in the Big Ten. I still think they're the favorites to win the league. But I think they have some things to work out in terms of how they are going to guard. I think they have some things to work out in terms of getting Ivy maximized in terms of his decision making, but also letting him be free to go just like do fun shit because he's really, really talented. And also they have to figure out a way to get referees to officiate Zach Edey better. And look, there was one charge that I thought actually really was a charge on Edey, where his like elbow really got up.
Swung the elbow, yeah, in the first half.
That was like an obvious charge, and everyone was still like pissed off about it. But there was one or two other charges, I think, in the second half that it was like, what do you expect Mr. Edey to do? You know, no other player in the country would get called a foul on that.
Yeah, the Purdue defense is definitely a question mark. That was something in the preseason we said, you know, when they gave up like 20 points to Jared Bynum in a secret scrimmage, I was like, what going on with this defense? And when you look at the personnel, like you look at Stefanovic, you look at Thompson, and if these aren't like these big physical, overwhelming guards, you know.
Well, I thought they put Thompson on Davis in the second half because of Ivy's foul trouble. And I mean, 27 for a reason, right? I think Ivy did a better job with him. I thought Ivy made some mistakes in how he guarded Johnny. I don't think he got up into his grill enough. I don't think he used his athleticism enough to really bother Johnny Davis. But there was more on the there was more meat on the bone, I think, in terms of how he defended it.
And then in the back, I mean, Edey and Williams, for how amazing they are offensively, they're not super fleet of foot for five men. Williams is quick.
Williams can guard on the perimeter.
They're not defensive centers. They're not Ike Obiagu or Ryan Kalkbrenner. They're offensive guys. I mean, Zachy is an absolute cheat code on offense.
Yes.
But he moves really well for 7'4", but that's only so quick, right?
Yeah, I agree. Where's your concern level with Purdue right now?
I mean, I think, you know, maybe they're, you know, in the preseason, I had them 16th. I think that's still too low. I think, you know, maybe they're somewhere between 8 and 10 or something.
So you don't think of Purdue as being in the, like, elite national title, like, top 6 tier?
I never did. They're a raw talent isn't as overwhelming. And now at the time I thought maybe Villanova would be there too. And then they beat Villanova and I was like, oh, you know, maybe Purdue is in there. But now for me, you have Baylor, but there aren't a ton of just like overwhelming teams like Duke, Gonzaga, Kansas. I mean, they're all up there. But in terms of like a kind of overwhelming favorite, even Baylor, I don't think that they're close to the distance between tier one and tier two as it was last year with Baylor and Gonzaga. I think it's more wide open. I might even throw Auburn up there with the Kansas group.
If Auburn gets Alan Flanagan back healthy with Walker Kessler and the way Wendell Green has played, and obviously Jabari, yeah.
They don't even need Flanagan. I mean, that they what took me off guard so much for Auburn, because I wasn't counting on anything from Flanagan with the Achilles injury. But did not expect Walker Kessler to be this good. I mean, even when I saw him earlier in the season, he was not great. Now he's blocking everything, he's hitting three pointers, he's just totally transforming this Auburn defense. And then Auburn's guards, I didn't realize that they were this good at defenders, especially Green and Jasper just getting after it. So that's really encouraging.
Yes, absolutely. I'm excited. I didn't really watch a ton of the Auburn LSU game. I'm excited to see, you know, there's so many good SEC matchups with this top of the league that, you know, we'll certainly get our opportunities to see this Auburn team. I know they have Florida coming up this weekend, Alabama after that, Kentucky a couple Saturdays after that. Like, we'll know with this group, without a doubt. But I think it's a conversation, at least, to be had. Did you watch Baylor versus Iowa State?
I watched like 5 minutes, but Providence DePaul was conflicting.
Well, have you watched Baylor recently? How about that?
Yeah.
Did you watch them tonight against Oklahoma?
No, I was watching Kentucky and LSU.
Fair enough.
I needed to see a little more LSU.
Well, I just wanted to hit on
some. I watched a little bit of NC State, Virginia Tech.
I wanted to hit on some Baylor stuff real quick. And Iowa State, because I thought that was an interesting game. I continue to be really, really impressed by LJ Cryer and Akinjo. Right? Like, I think if you told me in the preseason, if you asked me who's their best guard going to be, I would have said Adam Flagler. And it kind of feels like Adam Flagler's been the third best guard on this team. Not to say he's been good. I mean, he's averaging, 11 points a game, 4 assists, 42% from the field. He's, a very good player, but I just feel like I expected Flagler to be the guy to have to make the jump. And instead, they've just gotten continued better play from Akinjo. He's up to now, 6 assists to 3 turnovers a game. So he's, taking care of the ball as well as he has in his career. He's shooting it at a decent clip from 3 at 39% now. And Cryer just continues to make shots. I mean, he's been a big part of this team off the bench. I think kind of stepping into a similar role to what Flagler did for them last season, more of like a microwave scorer. You combine it with the size, the athleticism, the toughness on the interior with Sohan, who is just, I think he's going to be an awesome pro. I think he's a really good college player as it is.
He's and enormous.
They're just tough to beat. He's a beast. It's funny. I remember the limited viewing of Sohan I had had before the season. I thought he was more skill, and he has skill, but he is a freak athlete. He's a freak. I was honestly impressed by both Iowa State and Oklahoma, the way they were able to hang in the game, especially without the 3-point shot in particular. I mean, Iowa State only made 1 3 in this game against Oklahoma today. Oklahoma shot like 55% from the field. Yeah, 56%. And they only made 5 threes. Against that Baylor defense, that's impressive. Maybe that's a crack for Baylor. Maybe that's something that, that we should be looking at as a problem. But I just felt like both of those spots were prime opportunities for Baylor to blow a team out, and they didn't blow out either. But at the same time, they basically kept two NCAA tournament teams at arm's length for 40 minutes to start conference play. And I think that's an encouraging sign for the number one team in the country.
Their defense is just so overwhelming. And now when you have Kinjo playing like he is, and you have all these guards that can knock down shots with this like enormous monster pterodactyl front line, that's a real recipe for success. And they are looking like the clear number one. And now Iowa State was still kind of behind in KenPom compared in T-Rank and all the metrics compared to where their resume was, right? They were like 8th in the AP poll. Now they were like 41st in KenPom, even behind Providence. And I think they're probably closer to 8th than 41st. Their defense is legit awesome. They have a ton of size, and Brockington and Kalisher have had nice bounce back seasons. Kalisher was not good against Baylor, but with that kind of mix of length, experience, and scoring and creating, I mean, the Brockington, Hunter, Kalisher, and then Grill's been good this year too. They have a lot of guys who have more scoring ability than they've been given credit, and the defense has been awesome.
How about Tristan and Aruna with 23 points against Baylor?
Absolutely.
Ott's done a really good job with the guys he has. I mean, I'm intrigued to see what happens with Trey King. Have you heard anything about that or read anything?
No, I just saw that he committed. I don't know if he can play or not.
I think he can play. I mean, he didn't play at Georgetown, so theoretically he'd be able to play. I mean, I'd be happy for him to displace Robert Jones in the rotation, get some skill in there, but maybe fewer minutes as well for Alias Kuntz as well. Maybe that's something that could be good.
He was pretty good earlier in the year as like this nice glue guy, but
yeah. I like King at EKU though. So.
And then Georgetown got a guy today as well from Howard, who averaged
Wayne Bristol
13 points a game and shot it well as a freshman.
What an interesting recruiting decision to take a kid before the portal actually starts who played in the MEAC and was on the worst team or one of the worst teams in the MEAC and wasn't so overwhelming statistically that you have to take him. It was certainly a decision. Let's put it out there.
Hey, they had good luck with some kind of questionable portal guys, right? They had Shudier Belay. He was awesome last year.
Yeah. And Don Carey was probably not, I don't know if a reach, but close to one. He's been good.
Cade Rice has been solid, yeah.
I mean, they do okay with like their reaches, but I think on the aggregate, you just have to swing higher.
Absolutely.
Oh, well.
One team that did swing high that's just not working out, that's Michigan, right? Ooh,
we need to talk Michigan and Arkansas.
Right. Michigan adds one of the top transfers, a guy who was invited to the G League Combine, Devontae Jones. I mean, he was there with Hunter Dickinson and guys who, you know, Aaron Wiggins was there. Aaron Wiggins got drafted.
He was there with – how about this? He was there with Mike Smith. And they played each other, and Devontae Jones was better than Mike Smith, like, in that game.
Yeah, Carl Jones was – I mean, tons of guys were there. I had ranked him on my top 100 player list coming into the year, and he's just been blah to bad. When I saw them against Central Florida, he was fine, but he wasn't a difference maker. And I had texted you this last – Thursday, I guess, after the Aubrey Dawkins Bowl. I think Michigan this year is what people thought Providence was going to be in the preseason, right? Where you have the best player is a big man. He doesn't have enough help, right, with Dickinson compared to Watson. You have a guy in Brandon Johns who finished the year playing extremely well, just like Horkler, but Johns has gone back to earth. In Caleb Houston, you have the highly regarded wing shooter who doesn't hit shots, right? That was AJ Reeves before this year. And then I guess Jones would be the Durham, right? The highly regarded transfer. And then Brooks, I guess, would be, I don't know, I guess Bynum, just solid.
Yeah.
Giabate doesn't really have a comparison, but at least that starting lineup.
No, I mean, look, we talked about the Michigan problems in the past. Like, the fact that this team feels like a collection of forwards, plus a point guard in Devontae Jones who the ball sticks in his hands a little too much, who turns the ball over a little too much, who doesn't get to the free throw line, who is not a electric shooter from the beyond the arc, and he's making his shots but at low attempts. To combine that with a bunch of these like not super ball skilled threes and fours with Houston and Johns and Terrence Williams. Like that's just like trade Terrence Williams for an actual wing, you know? Like who needs a four man who could be traded for a real wing? You know, where can we ship Terrence Williams at the deadline? You know, it's like, last year's roster, what made them special was that obviously Mike Smith was really steady, but Livers and Franz Wagner in particular, and I think you could also throw Shawnee Brown into this mix, were big athletic wings who could shoot the three, but also handle the ball, make smart decisions, attack four on threes, attack closeouts, like operate an offense, playing like ball screens. I mean, they were very versatile. And so on the floor, you almost always had three to four guys who could do that, right? You go to Brown. When they go to Brown, they were oftentimes playing him at the four. Or Livers was the four. It was kind of nominal, whoever you wanted to call it, next to Brooks and Wagner and Smith. You know, once Brandon Johnson had to be in the rotation more, Michigan still had three really good ones, plus – Dickinson, and that was really tournament time, so it didn't matter as much again. I think this team is flawed structurally, and I think there's some pretty obvious chemistry issues too. Like, if you read some of the comments, like some of the older guys have made, like, it's not high school comments, like, that's never a good sign. You know, there is something not great in that locker room. And at this point, look, they're 7-6. They are who the record is. They just lost to Rutgers. I don't think they ever led in that game. If they did, it was very early. They kind of jumped on early and, you know, boat race. Geo Baker goes for 27 points. I mean, come on. I mean, this is really bad. You know, their resume right now is a neutral win against UNLV and a road win at Nebraska and a home win against San Diego State. And they're staring down Michigan State, Purdue, and Illinois in the next three. So look, the opportunity is there to fix it. No doubt. But, I mean, look, there's also an opportunity for this thing to be 7-9 heading into Martin Luther King Day. And that's scary. You know,
I had ranked, I ranked Devontae Jones in my top 100 players in the preseason. I did not rank Caleb Houston. You can kind of see this coming. He's not very strong. He's not super explosive. Just, you know, his use is more of like a spot up shooter at this point. But it is strange that you're seeing the chemistry issues, right? Like, it makes sense in Memphis where they just anoint Monty Bates and Jalen Duren ahead of guys that were successful last year. But I mean, this Michigan team is starting before Johns got moved out of the starting lineup for Giabate, they were starting a lot of vets. It wasn't like that they were throwing Kobe Bufkin and the coach's son and everybody in there for a big minutes. You know, the vets were playing. But, you know, this is a team in the preseason. I thought the pieces fit really well on paper. I had them as the number one seed. Now they're going to be lucky to even make the tournament, which is kind of shocking. But, you know, mentioned Brandon Johns had a great NCAA tournament. He's completely come back to earth. Terrence Williams didn't make a jump. A lot of people like Bufkin. He hasn't gotten a ton of leash yet. Pieces just aren't there. And we'll see if Michigan makes the tournament. I was kind of a believer, even through the Aubrey Dawkins Bowl, that they would figure it out. But they are running out of time, and this loss to Rutgers has me looking for a life raft here.
Yeah. Like, I don't know where this thing goes, because I think there's, when you have the combination of structural problems and chemistry issues, like, you can fit, if you just have structural problems, you might be able to get over some of it by playing hard. If you just have chemistry issues, you might be able to get over it by having enough talent and everyone just saying, like, screw this, like, we got to go play, or by, you know, team meeting, whatever. Like, sometimes, like, one of those things you can fix. Them both is really hard to fix. And yeah, I'd be really concerned. And again, it happens. Like, sometimes you just have a bad group, a bad draw, but, you know, I'm very surprised. And again, part of that is maybe we anointed Juwan Howard as, like, infallible too quickly, right? I think Juwan Howard's a tremendous coach. I think he's done a great job at Michigan. I also think this year he's done a really bad job, right? I think he's clearly not managed his roster very well. He has this, you know, lack of wing creation. He has now these chemistry issues. That's a problem. That sits on your head coach, right? At the end of the day, like, that's, you know, that sits at Juwan Howard's desk, and he'd be the first to admit it. And they got to figure it out, because if he doesn't, it's going to go back quick. So another team that I think I was more in on than you, Arkansas.
Yeah, I had them 25th in the preseason.
Falling off a cliff right now. And there were signs, right? I mean, this was, you know, all the way back to, they struggled with East Central in their Division II exhibition. And then, you know, some closer by games, right? I mean, you know, Northern Iowa, as I recall, they were losing late and then rallied and somehow covered the spread. They played a closer half with a closer game with Little Rock. They played a closer game with Mercer. You know, like with Mercer, for instance, they trailed with 10 minutes to go and then won by 13. I mean, there were signs here that this thing was not stable. And the last five games, they've lost 4 or 5. They got blown out by Oklahoma. They lost to Hofstra in Little Rock. They beat Elon, but now have lost consecutive games to Mississippi State and Vanderbilt. And I get that JD Notay didn't play against Mississippi State. I get, you know, like there's individually all of them except Hofstra are like somewhat justifiable or excusable. Even losing to Vanderbilt at Bud Walton Arena, like whatever it happens, Scottie Pippen's a dog. But taken together, you got some real problems here. Some real problems. I mean, Arkansas right now is 50th in KenPom. And they have a lot of work to do to go to the NCAA tournament. They don't have a win over a clear NCAA tournament team right now. And the SEC is not easy.
Yeah, there are definitely opportunities, but opportunities don't mean a ton if you're going to lose the home Vanderbilt. You know, because besides the quality wins, you got to get enough wins. And, you know, I haven't seen Arkansas yet. Definitely want to see them play. But, you know, when your whole non-con is pretty much nothing to write home about, I mean, they were flying so under the radar. People had them in the top 10 like a couple weeks ago. And then they start playing some teams and it all kind of unravels. But, yeah, I haven't seen them yet, so I don't really know whether to give up or not. What I do know is, you know, every week, every Monday afternoon, I go and I predict the NCAA tournament just to get a feel of, okay, when I say so-and-so is a four seed, do I have four seeds, or does that mean that they're really a six seed, or you know, just kind of putting things in place. And, man, the back end of the bubble is non-existent. There is plenty of room for teams to jump on. There's like 6-7 spots that you're just like, I don't think any of these teams are making the tournament, but there's 7 spots this year. You know, there's a really strong like top 28 to 30 at the top, and then it really falls off. You know, the teams like in Oklahoma or West Virginia that you think are a bubble team or a Creighton, I mean, they're going to be in clean. So there's room for Arkansas to sneak back on, but they're going to have to move quickly because they did nothing in the non-con.
Yeah, there's absolutely a path. I mean, we shouldn't say that there isn't, but I think the bigger problem for me is how they're playing right now. And I think the concern I would have is it feels like there's some pretty significant chemistry issues. Devo Davis played 9 minutes today and didn't score. Devo Davis didn't even attempt a shot. He had 3 turnovers, didn't score. That to me is Devo Davis in the doghouse. And there was Devo Davis was one of my favorite players in the country last year because he played his tail off. Like he showed up every single night and he just worked. Like he was in the trenches, he was rebounding, he was getting to the rim, he was just attack mode. And it has felt like to me when I've watched or I followed Arkansas this season, it has just felt like Devo Davis thinks he's an all-SEC guy. Devo Davis thinks he's an All-American. Devo Davis thinks he should be in the SEC Player of the Year mix. And Devo Davis is not that guy. Devo Davis is a glue guy. And glue guys who think they're not glue guys, that's a problem. And look, I mean, you combine that with Audis Toney, who came from a really bad chemistry situation at Pittsburgh. Do we really think he's, you know, adding significantly great things to the culture here? Chris Likes, do we think that his style of play lends itself to, you know, sunshine and roses? And look, you know, I think I just kind of considered it given that it would fit together because Moss has always done a good job of that. You know, I think if every Moss team for the most part, pretty much guys who were good played, guys who weren't didn't, and that was it, right? And it all worked. And I don't know how it worked, but it worked. And right now, it doesn't feel like this is working. And I think, again, just like Michigan, there are some like actual structural problems with this group. You know, they're, you know, I think, you know, Jalen Williams hasn't made the jump at center, which leaves you with, you know, him and Vanover. And that's not a great center duo. And you're playing a lot of Jack. You know, they're starting to play Jackson Robinson more. He was like in the closing lineup. He's not very good. KK Robinson's been a big disappointment. So yeah, I mean, there are some like actual like structural things here as well, but I think the chemistry does not feel right. That locker room feels very very tenuous right now.
And I was going to pose to you. I mean, we were talking one time about, well, multiple times, but maybe a year or so ago, about you need a team hierarchy, right? You can't just throw a bunch of transfers in there and then say, you know, whoever wins, wins. But then we looked at that Must Nevada team and how Must did it, where it's just like, you know, I'm going to add all these transfers, but I'm playing seven dudes. And if you're not in the seven, too bad. And it was working for him. And then we were kind of like, you know, maybe if you just load up and play the best guys, it'll all work itself out. Are we kind of back on you need a team hierarchy?
I mean, I think in general you do need a hierarchy, right? I don't think anyone would disagree with that. I think there are certain circumstances in which you can make it work, but I think it takes the right kids, and I just don't think Arkansas is the right kids right now.
Speaking of not having the right kids, we got some, you know, a really unexpected and insightful breaking news from Jim Boeheim.
Oh, yes.
Their defense isn't very good. I wonder who could have seen that coming. I mean, your backcourt of Joe Girard and Buddy Boeheim is not defending at a high level. I mean, who would have thought, you know? Especially when Buddy Boeheim has to play the whole game and do all the scoring. Who would have thought he would sacrifice some defense from his starting point of not being a great defender? And this front court of Jim Boeheim and Cole Swider. Cole Swider, who shoots the lights out, but Villanova would only play him like 15 minutes a game because his defense was so bad. Who would have thought you can't just plug him in a zone and everything is fine?
I kind of like Jesse Edwards, like especially on defense.
Yeah, but like
it just doesn't make up.
There's four other guys who can't defend.
Right. I mean, I watched a little bit of the Brown game and a little bit of the Cornell game because there was very little on both those days. And like, holy crap! Like the number of just wide open shots that weren't even like worked for. They just don't have, you know, like thinking. And I think the hope for Syracuse would have been that Benny Williams could have done some of this. They don't have an Alan Griffin. They don't have an, you know, Elijah Hughes. They don't have a, you know, Caius Battle or a Frank Howard, like a long athletic 6'6 dude with like some instincts who can get in a passing lane, you know. They don't have any of that.
Kadari Richmond?
Yeah, Kadari Richmond. He might have helped. I mean, they have Samir Torrance.
I mean, Richmond has not been good at Seton Hall, aside from like a couple games.
No.
But Seton Hall, with Aiken healthy, they don't really need him as much. Syracuse could have really used him. Jim's clip from the preseason where he said he thinks Joe Girard defense is just as good because Girard is solid, whatever that means. Not really working out. Cuse in T-Rank, 231st in defense.
They're 205 in KenPom.
They have no foot speed whatsoever.
Or 188 in KenPom, excuse me. I mean, Samir Torrance looks like a guy who should be playing at UMass or Siena.
Yeah, he's not a very good athlete either.
He's a really bad offensive player. Shooting 7 of 25 from 2 this season. 4 for 11 from the free throw line. And he's not like, for a guy like that to be playable at the high major level, he needs to, if you're not a good scorer, you need to be an elite passer and you need to be a really good defender. You need to be like a DeJuan Harris type.
Kind of moving on. Providence dropped 19 spots in T-Rank and 11 spots in KenPom.
Jeez. That's a tough one.
They are breathing life into Marquette. You know, since the UCLA Marquette game, I was like, this Marquette team is going to be the last team in the NCAA tournament. I can just feel it. And then they start 0-3, and it's like,
I was ready to give up after the 0-3 if they lost today.
I thought that they were going to be 0-4, but they still have all eight of their games against the bottom four, which is not like a rollover bottom four either.
No.
Especially now that Butler's healthy. So, you know, I thought that they would go, you know, they'd steal one or two against the top, be 9-11 or something, and kind of sneak into that last spot. But Providence is breathing some life into a seven-bid Big East.
I'm going to see Marquette. I'm going to go to their game against Seton Hall on the 15th of January. That should be fun. So.
You were cut out. I have no idea what you said.
I just said that I was going to go see Marquette versus Seton Hall on the 15th.
Oh.
And then maybe go back for Marquette Xavier on the 23rd.
All these Midwest cities are so close together.
I feel like it's less close than the Northeastern cities.
Yeah, I'm a Rhode Islander, so anything more than a half hour is like, oh my God.
Yeah,
Where am I going?
You're very lazy. You're not the grinder that I am. I'm driving 2 hours to Purdue last night, driving 2 hours to Notre Dame tomorrow for Notre Dame, North Carolina. It's big time. Some people work, some people podcast. So.
How about Notre Dame? Are they is Mike Bray done, you think, after this year?
I have no clue. I have zero feel for Notre Dame this year, like in general. But the same team they've been. I will say the one thing that could maybe swing it. Blake Wesley might be a sneaky one and done.
Yeah.
Like, there's some real conversation about that.
He's big. He handles the ball. He creates. He can play both guard spots.
Blake Wesley's KenPom comps are very funny. His first is BJ Young from Arkansas back in the day. His number two is Nico Clarith.
Nico Clarith?
I mean, they were both.
That took me a minute.
That actually make former. That's Providence legend Nico Clarith, by the way, Brad.
That's right.
this podcast may have never started if Nico had gone to Providence before. You know, if we had started the podcast before the Nico Providence buzz, and you had stolen Nico from me, I think we might have just no longer been friends. But Nico's freshman year and Blake Wesley's freshman year are actually very similar. Both 6'5", like athletic guards. Nico had Blake has better like point guard skills, but it's not a bad Ken Pomcom. Number three Ken Pomcom is Jordan Clarkson. Number four is Jaden Ivey, and number five is Marcus Thornton, William and Mary. It's good company.
Good size, scores three levels.
But if they got into a point where they lost Wesley, Hub, Leshefsky, and Dane Goodwin, all in one game.
And Atkinson. Yeah.
And Atkinson. And, Cormac Ryan is one more, excuse me. Like, Trey Wirtz is a fourth-year guy. Like, if Notre Dame lost everybody, I mean, that would be a really tough situation to walk into. Like, not as easy a place to go, like, fill six spots in the portal. Tough.
Yeah, who would they even hire? I was trying to just kind of go through a couple of the spots that I thought were going to open and just, you know, assign a new coach there and kind of see where the dominoes fell just as an exercise. There were three that I really couldn't come up with, and that was Georgia, South Florida, which now they're our guy is Brian Gregory, okay, and then Notre Dame.
Washington.
Really had no idea. What did you say?
Washington is hard, too.
Well, I mean, they could do. There was obviously our guy Nico Medved.
But no ties to the region even.
He's regionless. I mean, Furman, Drake, Colorado State.
I would hire Nico Medved to coach on Mars.
Yeah,
but
Arizona State was tough too.
But that's but saying Nico Medved's the fit for Washington State is kind of hard to me to say.
For Washington,
I have the perfect name for Arizona State.
Who?
You just got to go find a guy who has lots of experience coaching in the state of Arizona.
Sean Miller.
Some high-level NCAA tournament success. Experience in the Pac-12. I mean, he checks every box. Big-time recruiter.
Poor Pitt. I was thinking him to Pitt.
No, that's the fit. That's the fit is Pitt.
But. How about if Maryland gets Kevin Willard? You think Kyle Smith would go to Seton Hall?
No.
Former Columbia guy? You know.
I don't think so.
No.
I've heard it's not super likely that it would be Shaheen Holloway at Seton Hall, though. Which I think is interesting. Not a good year for Shah to do it. Shah's like they don't have a great team this year.
Think you'd probably go Mark Schmidt first. I mean, he's built some nice at large teams.
Yeah, but Shah's connected.
Yeah.
Brad hates the connections. Brad just wants to hire the best coach.
Well, supposedly when I guess Providence hired Tim Welsh, I guess Jim Larranaga thought he should have gotten the job and was very upset about it. But like he had no, I think at that time that was before Mason had done anything, you know, yeah. Before they made the Final Four and all that. So would have been a stretch, but yeah, he did play there. So
should Seton Hall should hire Kim English. No, that's not happening. Just Kim English is the flavor of the month still. I really enjoyed Kim English getting a bunch of heat from Kansas fans because he said that Kansas has like average talent and it's
yeah. he said that Kansas and that George Mason have comparable talent. Yeah.
I mean, like, it's not that far off.
That's kind of far off.
In terms of like recruiting ranking, I think is what he's saying. Like Ticket Gaines could play at Kansas.
Yeah, Kansas' whole thing is they get like a couple 5-stars and then a couple 3-stars that when they're seniors are just awesome.
Which is why I'm curious to see if Latrell Jossel becomes something somewhere else because he was one of those 3-stars. Because I mean that team right now, if you think about it, DeJuan Harris, Missouri State, Christian Brown, 130 in the 24/7. Oche Agbaji in the 300s.
And both those guys are going to get drafted, Brown yep. and Agbaji.
Particularly Agbaji. Agbaji's going to be like top 20-ish.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Look, should Kim have said that? No. But, like, is it that far off? Probably not. I will say, Ticket Gaines is, like, my favorite player in the country. I love Ticket Gaines. I don't know if you've watched any George Mason, but Ticket Gaines is shooting 50% from three. He gets every loose ball. He gets every rebound. He's long. He's athletic. He's doing like Herb Jones shit. It's awesome.
I mean, he was solid at Tennessee. There's a log jam.
But he learned to shoot.
One of my favorite guys who has got to be near the top of the surprise player list is Darian Sebring.
Oh, yeah.
Just incredible finishes around the rim. Just like.
How about the
body contorting? Just like everything's going down. I think I saw you shooting like 62% of the rim.
How about the huge win today for NC State? They were on the life support. I mean, that's a job that very well could open this cycle.
Virginia Tech is not very good.
Every time I think Virginia Tech might be okay, they do this.
The whole ACC was all these teams had like one good player, you know, like Miami had Isaiah Wong as like their by far best player. Virginia Tech had Aluma, Syracuse had Buddy. NC State at the time you were thinking, okay, probably Manny Bates, but now it's Sebring. There's just not enough help around these guys.
Yeah.
And it's like, why
Wake has Alondis Williams and LaRavia.
Wake is looking good for that third spot.
Louisville is starting to get there.
Yeah, Louisville's getting there.
Schedule's been fortunate.
Georgia Tech with Mike Devo, they're not getting there, but that's another example of just teams with one great player.
Yeah,
and, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, the lack of ACC resume. They're going to get, whatever, 2, 3, 4 bids. But when you draw it out, it's very tough not to give the ACC 4 bids.
Well, someone's going to go 12-8 in the league, and you're going to be like, well, I guess. Right. You know, like, yeah. The only way it doesn't happen is if literally everyone goes like between like 500 and two games under, you know, and Duke is like 20 now. Like that's the only way.
Because yeah, if like
if you go like 13-7 in the ACC, you're going to the NCAA tournament. That's just reality. Like unless you had a shit rest, like Miami, if they go 13-7 or 12-8, is going to go to the tournament. North Carolina, Wake Forest, like yes, maybe Boston College, like no, Boston College wouldn't get in with that. No, you know, maybe even like NC State might not get in with that because NC State's, you know, got a lot of losses and like the counting number will be tough. But like for the most part, like you're gonna get in. I mean, Virginia Tech, like, they're 0-3 in the league now. And I get that they've played Wake, Duke, and NC State, so no gimmies, but they had two of those games at home. That's like, a real problem. The Maryland road win, don't know if it matters. The St. Bonnie's neutral win, don't know if it matters. Virginia Tech's, like, very, 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 like, in danger right now. Like, I don't think I realized that until I started podcasting. Holy cow, they needed that game today.
And it's the whole, you know, let's just trust the coach with lesser talent thing has not worked out this year, right, where you have Virginia Tech, which at least I was saying that they had lesser talent. I don't know if everyone agreed with me. But, you know, everyone was saying Florida State and Virginia had lesser talent, and you know, they're both even worse than I had thought. Michigan, obviously, we didn't think that they had lesser talent, but it seems like the ranking may have inadvertently been more trust you on Howard than we wanted. It's not great for the let's just trust the coach teams this year.
Yeah, that's true. The only other thing I want to hit on this podcast, you might have other things, but. Can we talk about Northwestern Michigan State? Because you saw the Wildcats this weekend. I saw the Wildcats.
I watched the whole game.
I did too.
Michigan State's talent level is not – it doesn't jump out as a top 10 talent level. But, like, they have a bunch of just, like, good, solid players. And they shoot the ball well. Bingham's a great rim protector. Bingham might be good enough to be a best player – but he's not like an offensive best player. So it's going to look kind of weird. I mean, they played Joey Hauser 28 minutes, which is insane. Guys are in foul trouble. I mean, maybe they're one piece short, but they just keep winning games. And, you know, maybe they have more of like 8-seed talent level, but I think they're staring down a 4 or 5 seed.
Yeah, I mean... Look, I thought Michigan State's guards in this game were really underwhelming for the first 16 minutes in particular. And I thought that some of that could be attributed to how Chase Audige played on the defensive end. Like, Chase was really disruptive. I thought Casey Simmons was disruptive. I thought Ryan Greer played pretty steady defense. I thought there was just, like, an energy about Northwestern in the first 15 minutes of this game that really made it challenging for Michigan State. And when you make Michigan State play in the half court, they have some issues, like some real issues executing. But I thought Hogard was really, really important late in the first half. I thought Walker made some pretty good plays distributing in the second half. And they got the tempo going a little bit. And then they got Gabe Brown going, which I think was the biggest thing, right? I thought, you know, Brown – continues to elevate his game. He's become a really reliable shot maker for them. Christie, I thought, made some big shots. This game was there for Northwestern's taking. It was really ugly with all the fouls. I mean, just awful. Northwestern missed a lot of free throws. They missed 10 free throws in this game. Chase Audige and Boo Booey's shot selection was pretty poor, Audige in particular. I thought it was hilarious listening. You know, Brad and I just brought this during the game, but
Robbie Hummel was just seething the whole – anytime Chase Audige got the ball, he was okay, just –
Chase Audige earned it. Those were awful. He was just
seething. There was one where Audige kind of went up for a shot and then tried to do like a behind-the-back pass midair. And Hummel was like, that is just a bad play, a very, very bad play. He sounded like Carl Ravitch.
Yeah. Audige is really talented, but he needs to be – he's a great defender. And he has a really talented offensive package, but the decision making is really, really bad. And Northwestern just needs more from its two guards. And again, you look at the stats, you say, oh, you know, each of them scored 12 points. Like, you know, maybe if they made, I mean, you know, they should have won that game if they made their threes. And yeah, that's like true, right? Like if Northwestern shoots 9 for 24 from three in this game, they probably win it. But that's the game you have to win. That's if you want to be an NCAA tournament team, Michigan State's not talented enough that you don't win that game at home. You need that game. And Northwestern, you know, it's just there were just so many mistakes. Northwestern had 15 offensive rebounds against Michigan State. And that is huge. And they didn't win that game. I mean, it was right there. I thought that Chris Collins way overplayed Robbie Barron. I thought that Elijah Williams, when Northwestern was going bigger, was a way better look. Also with the Ryan Young, Pete Nance 4-5 duo. Young has his issues defending in space, but he's just like disruptive. I mean, he had 11 and 8 in 20 minutes. He's good. And you know, Pete Nance is really good. Northwestern has the piece to be an NCAA tournament team. I just don't trust that they'll be able to get there. And they have two huge games coming up. Two huge ones in the next week. They have Penn State at home and Maryland at home. Those are the two. And again, of the next four, if I said the next 2 weeks, you would assume I was saying at Ohio State and at Michigan State. I ain't even worried about those. Northwestern doesn't need those games. Northwestern needs to beat Penn State and Maryland at home. Yeah, if they don't win those two games, like, you're in trouble. Like, you're not going to ask it.
And then, you know, speaking of Penn State, I mean, they knock out Indiana. Which, again, same with Northwestern, same with Louisville, Wake Forest, these teams. It's tough to make an NCAA tournament prediction and not put Indiana in, and maybe even Northwestern at this point. But Indiana's got to get moving as well. You lose to Penn State. I was surprised I didn't see more fire Mike Woodson chatter on Twitter. I searched Mike Woodson's name on Twitter. There wasn't a ton. Just kind of like one guy who was very upset.
Jalen Pickett cooking the Mike Woodsons.
He had a nice three-pointer. I saw that play.
He's very inefficient, but he's a shot maker for sure.
But yeah, the season is not going how Indiana fans want it to go, and this was exactly my point with the whole Maryland Mark Turpin stuff, right? You fire Archie Miller because he's not getting the job done, and now Mike Woodson's kind of underachieving so far in year one, but if he doesn't make the tournament, I mean, it was his first year. You got to give him a break. Right. And so now you have a whole new clock to get back to relevance where, you know, maybe Archie could have put the pieces together and made it again this past year if guys came back. So
what do you think is the problem for Indiana?
Well, Xavier Johnson.
Yeah.
Is not what people thought. And Christian Lander did not take a step like some people may have thought. Miller Kopp's okay. Race Thompson's okay. Jackson Davis is very good. The bench, which looks like a strength, is just kind of a whatever.
You know, I think the very
Parker Stewart's been their best two guard, but he's just kind of whatever too.
I think the very simple thing is like, who's their second best player? Race
Miller Kopp. Yeah.
Race or Miller? Neither of those really inspire. Tamar Bates has not been as good as I thought he'd be. I like Geronimo. I really do. He's a guy where
he feels like 5 minutes.
He's a guy, if he portals, I would take him in another high. I would certainly
take him. He portaled last year and a bunch of high majors were all over him, man.
He's a good player. I think he could be like a Justin Smith type.
You know who would be a great second best player for this Indiana team?
Armon Franklin, Al Durham.
I was gonna say Durham, yeah.
Yeah, that would help. But those guys weren't good enough last year. So, like, I mean, Durham's been better, but.
Got to put the ball in Durham's hands. That's what we've learned through the first 2 months.
You just needed to let him be the point guard. Oh, well. Let him
get to the rim.
He's crafty. All right, well, that's all I have. Oh, we should – let's wrap it up with this. Loyola San Francisco shotgun scheduling. Kind of the best thing ever.
I mean, when I saw the tweet from Matt Norlander, like, We got a big schedule news incoming. I wasn't expecting Loyola in San Francisco. I was expecting something really big, but.
Okay. Well, it was.
I mean, cool. It's an interesting game. I'll certainly check the box score.
It was very funny because I was talking to a member of the San Francisco staff in the afternoon, and he's, you know, we were talking about that game getting canceled, and I said, you know, and they were like, we're looking for a game. I said, you know, you should call Loyola. Like, maybe they would, you know, maybe they'd play. Like, Loyola's good. They need a game. They just had a game canceled. And he's like, the guy was kind of like coy with me. I was like, yeah, maybe there's like a thing happening. And then I got a text at like 8 that like it was not happening. Like Loyola was not going to play. Like they've talked about it. They're not going to play. And then I get in the car. I'm driving home. I drive back from Purdue. I get home and the game's done. I'm like, wow, how about that? Very cool. Happy it got done. Like for both teams, I think it's really good for the sport. I think it's great for Loyola's opportunity to get an LR. I think it's great for San Francisco's. I'm all for this. I think it's a great matchup. Lucas Williamson. Like Lucas against Jamari Bouye, really fun. Todd Golden versus Drew Valentine. Winner becomes the hot name for jobs. I mean, why not?
As someone who knows both staffs,
yes.
Why'd they choose Salt Lake City?
Middle ground.
That's like exactly the middle.
It's not exactly the middle. I think Denver would probably be the middle, but they needed So I think it was a combination of a couple things, right? So first and foremost, it becomes a guaranteed Q1 for both sides. So they needed a neutral.
Neutral, yep.
Right. So like I know. Loyola had conversations with teams where they would have been playing a road game to guarantee being Q1. Like St. Louis, for instance. I know there was a conversation about playing St. Louis. I know there was a conversation about one other team. I forget who it was. Actually, there was a conversation I heard about Arizona that didn't obviously come to fruition. So like basically it's like first off, you need to be neutral for the Q1. And then it's like, where can we find a gym that we can ideally like staff and also be able to use, but also like potentially broadcast the game out of? And the Salt Lake City Community College gym is actually pretty nice. And I think one of the staffs like knew like the staff at Salt Lake CC and was able to like get it confirmed and get staff and things like that, all the things you need for a game day. So I think the other thing is, there's issues. This is actually something interesting that people might not know. There's issues right now with like getting, obviously there's been a lot of like commercial flights canceled. People have seen that. There've also been issues with getting private planes because just like a commercial flight, you need staff, you need crew, and you need a pilot and you need a flight attendant. You know, you need like people to do the flight. And as of right now, as of recording this podcast, Loyola does not have a charter to go home. From Salt Lake. They did get a charter to get there, but Loyola is supposed to take a Delta flight at 5:30 home after the game that's being played at noon. They're hoping they can get a charter and they'll be able to cancel the flights. But right now, they're supposed to get on a Delta flight from Salt Lake City home. So I think that's one of the other things. Like it's easier than playing in a college town. Like you could play it, like I'm trying to think of like a school you could play, like I don't know, maybe BYU would be a better venue where, you know, you play at Colorado, but then you'd have to get to an airport. You know, Salt Lake City Community College is presumably pretty close to the Salt Lake Airport. And they can, so if one or both teams has to commercial flight back, they'd have to be able to be close to the airport. So I think that's part of it. And they're getting in pretty late tomorrow night too. So that might be it as well. So that's my best explanation as to why. I don't know if Salt Lake, it specifically was better than other cities, other than just like convenience and like logistics, but needed to be Q1, and then some of the transportation stuff I think is part of it as well.
That's all I had. I mean,
yes, looking forward to that game. Look forward to this weekend. There's gonna be some good games. College football over on Monday, so after that, no excuses for lack of college basketball awareness and coverage. So. We will keep you updated. We'll have lots of content to come. I'm gonna get a lot of games the next couple weeks. Hopefully they don't all get canceled. That would suck. But if not, I will be at a lot of games. So stay out for my Twitter feed and see the adventures. Follow me on Instagram if you really want to see the adventures. Some elite Instagram stories. So anyway, that's the podcast, folks.